Welcome to Golf Better at Edwin Watts Golf. Episode number 45. Hello, everyone. My name is Tom Brussell, and thank you so much for joining us. Whether you're a first-time listener or a regular to our show, we are so glad that you're with us. Speaking of regulars, sitting across from me here in Studio A at the Watts Compound, Kenny Nicholson, technical specialist. Kenny, how you doing, man?
I'm doing great, man. Glad to be here.
You know what's amazing? I was looking at it this morning, Kenny, is as of this show, we are one-third of the way through the year 2009.
I know you mentioned that yesterday, and I was just shocked. It's just going by so fast. I mean, here we are in spring golf. We've already had one major, got another one coming up, and I mean, it's just flying by this year.
Yeah, the Masters is already in the books. Next major on the way is the PGA at Bethpage Black in mid-June, and then after that, you got the British Open over in Turnberry, and in August, we go up to the Hazeltine Country Club in Chaska, Minnesota. But interesting what happened in the month of May is the PGA Tour decided a couple years ago, hey, let's move one. Let's move the Players' Championship from March to May. So it's almost like we got a feel of a major every month.
Yeah, which is exciting. I think that they were forced to do something, you know, to try to create some excitement throughout the first portion of the year, and they did a great job. I mean, to be honest, I'm extremely excited that they did that. I mean, I have something to look forward to as far as majors go every month for the first part of the season.
It's great. I had a friend that works at the tour office, and this was years and years ago when the talk used to always be about moving, the possibility of moving the Players to May. And he told me it wasn't on the record or anything. He just said it'll never happen. And his rationale was the course can never be in as good a shape in May as it is back in March, because March, you know, the heavy rye, and it's absolutely beautiful. But I'll tell you, with the new clubhouse and the new course conditions, after they completely redid TPC Sawgrass, it's amazing in May.
Yeah, it was amazing before, but I think that, you know, with the ride dying off, or, you know, and having the tournament earlier in May, the greens, if you can think that they could have them a little bit faster, I mean, I think that that's one aspect to it, but I think it's also just bringing some more excitement earlier in the year.
Well, May 7th to 10th, so it's right around the corner.
Yeah, I mean, you got the U.S. Open is Father's Day weekend, and then right after that, or right before that, is the PGA, so I mean, you got a bunch of good tournaments to look forward to.
Well, talk a little bit about, before we get into it, what's new at Edwin Watts Golf right now?
Well, I mean, some of the things that we've got new right now is we've got a Facebook page. I think that's a lot of what's going on out there in the business aspect of the world is, you know, people are trying to get some of the social networking aspects into their business plan. And, you know, we're introducing a lot of new products on there. Putting our email campaigns up there, specials that we have going on, things that are happening out at retail. So if you have a chance, look us up on Facebook at Edwin Watts Golf, or you can go to our website down at the bottom of the page. There should be a link, you know, down at the bottom that says, you know, join us at Facebook. And something we're real excited about, you know, you get more instant feedback from your customer, as well as somebody that's following you and wants to know what's going on in the world. And some of the exciting new products that are launching, we can let you know immediately, hey, they're in the door. You know, give us a shout if you're looking for them. And it gives you just a little more information about what's going on in the world of golf.
Well, a new look to the website, a little bit more of a change to the website coming up. But one thing that's not disappearing, it's that Ask Kenny button, right?
Yeah, Ask Kenny, which is obviously, if you go to the Golf Better podcast page, there's an e-spot on the left-hand side of our homepage. If you click there, it has all of our episodes. And then within that landing page is an Ask Kenny button. If you have any questions that you're looking to ask, and you know, don't be intimidated. I love all the questions, and I answer each and every one of those. And if you're lucky enough that we use one of your questions on the show, we'll send you one of the new Golf Better at Edwin Watts Golf podcast hats that are absolutely fabulous.
And what a great setup, because that's what we're going to be doing today. You have a number of questions that the listeners have sent in over the last month or so since we did the last Ask Kenny show, and we'll get some lucky listeners. We'll get one of those new hats.
Yeah, I mean, I'm excited. This is part of the show that I like the most. I mean, I love talking to the engineers and the developers of these golf clubs and golf balls and bags and everything and shafts, but you know, at the end of the day, you know, this is our customer that's asking these questions. And, you know, all these questions are great. And I wish we had enough time to use all of them on the show, but we don't. So we pick a few of those out and we like to use them on the show and, you know, highlight a couple of the good questions that are out there.
And before we get into it, you had a few comments about our last show with Tom Stites at Nike Golf.
Everybody seemed to love it. I mean, Tom's, you know, he's got a great ability to be able to speak in layman's terms about engineering perspectives on golf clubs. And, you know, it's just neat talking to a guy that develops a golf club that Tiger uses. I mean, not that, you know, other players out there aren't great, but, you know, here's a guy that helps develop products along with Tiger. And, you know, some of the things that he's able to accomplish with the restrictions that they put on these guys with the USGA and all the limits they have, it's pretty incredible. And it seems like a lot of people enjoyed the show. I know I did.
And if you missed it, just go back to edwinwattsgolf.com, the Golf Better link on the left side, and go up and find episode number 44. Well, Liz, you ready to dive in?
Yeah, let's dive right in.
Awesome. Our first question is from Paul Dundas. We don't have a find out where Paul's from, but we will find out, Paul, where you live, because you'll be getting one of the 2009 Golf Better hats. Paul writes, Kenny, does FootJoy still make the Real Fit shoes? I love the pair I got a few years back, and I'm looking for a new pair.
Yeah, I actually answered his email the other day, and I needed to respond back to him, but FootJoy is still making the Real Fit golf shoe. You know, as far as us carrying that particular shoe, there's a lot of other shoes in their portfolio that we're carrying as well, but the FootJoy Real Fit shoe will still stay in the line. If you're not familiar with that shoe, it has the what they call the BOA technology, which it doesn't have any shoelaces. It has a wheel basically on the back of the shoe, and it has cables that run through the arch or the top part of your foot. So if you're familiar with ski boots, is where they really pioneered this BOA technology. FootJoy had an exclusive on that for a few years, and they're still making that shoe. And what it does is it actually, when you tighten the screw basically on the back of the shoe, it actually pulls your foot down and back into the correct position of the shoe, instead of like laces sometimes just push your foot straight down. This actually pulls your foot back into the footbed of the shoe. It's extremely comfortable. You basically, to get them off, you just pop the little winding mechanism on the back out, and it opens the shoe wide open. It's easy to get on, easy to get off. You don't have to worry about your shoelaces coming loose during a round of golf. And talking about just a shoe that's extremely comfortable and very, very user-friendly, absolutely, the FootJoy Real Fit is still out there for you.
And the good thing about FootJoy, if you don't see it in the Edwin Watts catalog, you could still call, and FootJoy will ship that shoe directly to you.
Yeah, I mean, it's easy to call the 800 number or shoot me an email. You can go to FootJoy.com, see what styles they have available. We can easily order those direct from FootJoy and have them ship those directly to your house. And usually they ship within 24 to 48 hours, so you can have them in 7 to 10 days.
Paul Dundas, Real Fits are still on the market, and we'll be getting in touch with you to get you that 2009 Golf Better cap. Kenny, our next question is from Dave Bernard. He is from Ortonville, Michigan. And Kenny, he writes, Dear Kenny, why are utility and fairway clubs recommended for older golfers?
They're not specifically recommended for just older golfers. I answered him direct with the same answer. Just look at the PGA Tour. I mean, how many guys don't use a utility hybrid club in their golf bag now? You'd be surprised. It's a very low number of guys that do not. The reason that they're extremely popular in seniors and ladies is because the hybrid, the way that it's designed, they're able to have a lower center of gravity, and they're able to move it deeper and further back by having a wider club head, basically. So what you're enabling the golf club to do is to help you get the ball airborne a lot easier than you are with a long iron. I mean, I couldn't imagine, you know, thinking back, you know, 10, 15, 20 years ago with somebody that had a slower swing speed and trying to hit a 3 or 4 iron and try to get it airborne. It was just extremely difficult. With a hybrid, you can have a much slower swing speed and still get the ball airborne extremely easy. And what that enables you to do is some of those shots where you're needing to hit a hybrid, you're able to land it on the green and stop it instead of just running it completely through the green. And now you got to get up and down for par or bogey or birdie or whatever it is. So hybrids are not specifically used just for seniors and ladies. They're used from junior golfers to amateurs, mid-amateurs, seniors, ladies, PGA Tour, LPGA, and the senior PGA. They're widely used from everybody in golf. And absolutely, I would say if you don't have one in your bag and you've never demoed one, you're missing out.
And used from around the green, too, in short shots.
Yeah, they absolutely are. Go back to the British Open several years ago. And
Todd Hamilton,
yeah. I mean, had used a hybrid to get up and down and win the British. And, I mean, it's one of those things that's a utility club. And the reason that it's utility, it's used for multi-purposes. I mean, whether it's off the tee on a short par 4, off the tee on a long par 3, from the fairway, around the greens, you can use the golf club from all over the place. And one of the guys, when hybrids first came out, I remember he sent me an email and he said, Kenny, this club is so easy to hit, it should be considered cheating.
Well, Kenny, from a retailer's point of view, Are you seeing hybrids and steel flex really? I mean, steel shafts going away, or are there still a lot of steel offerings?
Well, I mean, what you find typically in hybrids is going to be a graphite shaft, because you typically want something that has a lower kick point. What I mean by that is it flexes towards the bottom of the shaft a little bit more and helps get the ball airborne. There's not, I mean, the number of hybrids that we sell with steel shafts are very minimal. Generally, that's going to be somebody that has a very high swing speed and typically has a real high ball flight, and they don't need the advantage of a graphite shaft. You know, me personally, I have a fairly high swing speed, yet my hybrid, I still use a graphite shaft because I enjoy the flexibility of being able to get the ball airborne easy, and for some reason, it just fits the club a little bit better.
Dave, thanks so much for your question, and be on the lookout for the Golf Better cap coming to your mailbox soon. All right, our next question is from Michael Guerrero. Michael writes, Kenny, first off, I really enjoy the podcast. I listen every time a new one becomes available, and sometimes I listen more than once to write down a web address or product or an idea. I'm 36 years old. I've been playing golf for 2 years now. I'm a 30 handicap, and I'd love to be a consistent 20 handicap. My question is this. I seem to never take a divot. Every time I play, everyone I play with takes one, and they seem to hit the ball solid every time. What am I doing wrong, and how can I take a divot to ensure I'm hitting the ball solid? Thanks, and keep up the good work, Michael Guerrero.
Michael's not playing with some of the guys I play with because they take a divot, and sometimes it's disastrous. I mean, there's a lot of different ways to look at it. Some of the what we call pickers of the game, I mean, guys that never take a divot. Payne Stewart was one of those guys that never takes a divot. I think Davis Love is one that doesn't take a real big divot. There's a few different ways to look at it. I think personally that somebody that has a high ball flight doesn't really need to, you know, take a divot to get the ball airborne, really, especially with the way technology has advanced in golf clubs and these lower center of gravities. You know, a lot of times, especially when you're hitting a wedge or a sand wedge or a 9-iron or something, I like to be able to take a nice big divot, because what you do is you compress the golf ball and you create a little bit more spin. The ball goes higher, and when it lands, it typically, you know, is able to stop a little bit easier than, say, somebody that just picks the golf ball. But there's not one person or what have you that thinks that one is better than the other. I mean, if you're a good ball striker and you don't take a divot, that's great, because here's a disadvantage of taking a divot. One, if you can hit it a little bit fat, and typically what happens is when you do that, you'll notice that you're going to hit a low hook, because you've actually, the hosel of the club sometimes grabs the ground first and closes the club face down, or vice versa. The toe of the club grabs the ground first and opens the club face up, and you hit this big slice. So I wouldn't be so concerned about not taking a divot. If you're wanting to learn how to take a divot, one of the approaches that I teach, and I taught my daughter Holly, who's 13 years old, and trying to teach her how to take a divot, was putting something down, you know, about an inch in front of the golf ball, and not having them focus on that, but just, you know, in the back of their mind telling them that I want to remove that item from where it's at right now when I get done with my swing. And just about the only way to do that is to take a divot. Now, whether it's a broke tee or whatever you put down there, that's your main focus. Is don't worry so much at first about, you know, watching the golf ball. Just concentrate on being able to remove that item from out in front of the golf ball. And typically what you find is you learn how to take a divot when you used to not be able to.
That's kind of a drill that's the complete opposite of how to hit a sand shot. A lot of times instructors will draw a line about an inch or two behind the ball wanting you to take sand first. In this case, you're putting something in front of the ball.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you're exactly correct about bunker shots. I remember when I was younger trying to learn how to do that, the instructor just basically drew a circle around the golf ball and told me, said, Kenny, I want you to remove all of the sand out of this circle. Do not worry about the golf ball. Just try to take all of the dirt out of this circle. So that's, you're really correct. I mean, you're trying to learn how to, you know, taking a divot, the divot's always going to be in front of the golf ball if you're hitting it correctly. So putting something down in front of that and your focus being on that, typically it helps you learn how to take a divot. You know, the one thing you don't want to do is to just dip down. I don't want to use Charles Barkley as a reference, but how he dips down on his swing sometimes, because what you do then is you typically tend to hit the ball fat. You know, you want to take your normal swing, but you want to drive down through the golf ball, remove that item, and basically what you're able to do is compress it, create a little more height and a little more spin, and hopefully that'll help for you.
Michael, hope that works, and keep practicing, and maybe the divots will come, but maybe the score will go down, which is the whole intent. Kenny, our next question comes from Jim Raines. It's a little more product and more vendor specific. It's regard Callaway and the FT9 iMix. He writes, Here, Kenny, does the FT9 iMix shaft head combination work as well as the regular FT9? Is the integrity of adding a shaft with torque wrench as solid as it is with the shaft permanently installed? And lastly, from a forgiveness point, is the FT9 equal to the FT5? Thanks for advance. We got three questions here. Yeah.
I mean, as far as is the integrity disrupted by doing that? No, absolutely not. I mean, there's been plenty of tests done on these, and this approach is not going to go away. If anything, it's probably going to get a little bit stronger because of some of the manufacturers out there where you're able to actually change the lie angle and the face closure of the golf club as well. So having the ability to change shafts in a golf club like Callaway with the FT9 and the FTIQ is a huge advantage because throughout the year, your golf swing can change. And let's say one day you're going out there and it's a real windy day and you typically have a real high ball flight with the shaft that you're using now. Well, you have the option of saying, hey, if I ever want to get another shaft for a minimal price, I can. One that has a little bit higher kick point, a little bit stiffer shaft that's going to bring the ball down. You know, if you're that much into golf, you know, it's not something that everybody would want to do. But the guy that likes to tinker, the gal that likes to tinker with their golf clubs, it's a great way to experiment just a little bit and try different things. And as far as the forgiveness on the FT9 versus the FT5, both are great drivers. They're price point driven. You know, if money is not the big object, then the FT9 is definitely, in my opinion, a more forgiving golf club because it has a higher moment of inertia. And what moment of inertia is, real quick, is if you hit the ball off center of the club face, okay, you're going to create torque there. So moment of inertia is basically moment of impact. You have less twisting on impact, so you tend to not have as much dispersion in the ball flight. So an example of that is, say you hit it, you know, a half an inch off center with, you know, something that has a higher moment of inertia, you're going to have more distance gain and less distance off left and right.
So less dispersion. Yeah, right. Yeah.
Just less dispersion. So it's definitely a better golf club. That's not knocking the FT5, still a great golf club and a terrific price. But, you know, it's one of those things. If a guy has the FT5, would I advise him to jump right into the FT9? It would be just a question of the player himself. You know, technology does change. Items do get better for the most part. And you would have to test those on your own and try to figure that out. But, yeah, the FT9 definitely has a high moment of inertia. Terrific driver. If you haven't had a chance to hit one, I have, and I believe you have. It's a great driver. I love it, and I think you will as well.
Jim, thank you for your question. Kenny, our next is from Eau Claire, Wisconsin, Philip Straczynski, and he writes, "Dear Kenny, last week, actually it was a few weeks ago now, Padraig Harrington had a putt, I believe this was at Augusta, where he took the practice swing, addressed the ball, and then stepped back. The wind blew the ball. He was penalized a stroke and had to replace his ball at that spot, then proceed and putt. Do you see this ruling ever changing in the future, or is that just plain being unlucky? Thanks, and have a great one."
Yeah, I don't. I mean, it actually affected Holly, my daughter, at a golf tournament a few weeks ago. They were playing on pretty slick greens, and she was on a hill, and she sold her putter. And when she did, the wind blew the ball, and it moved, and she had to assess a penalty and replace the ball. I think it's one of those things where it's not exactly a great rule because you're not making an attempt to hit the golf ball or anything. And it's basically an act of God that causes it to move. And, you know, it's one of those things that it's just bad luck, bad timing. And I don't see the rule changing anytime soon. There's a few rules out there that
I think it's a rule within the rules, the definition of being at address. And you, the greatest player in the game back in the day, Jack Nicklaus, never sold his
putter,
club.
Ever. And that's why.
Or his long irons driver. He always would hover it because technically he was never at address.
Yeah, if you don't place the club on the ground, okay, you're never at address. So if something like that happens, you're not going to be assessed a penalty stroke. So it's a great point, and that's the reason that that Jack did it. He was never at address. You know, it's kind of a crazy rule for the most part, because here's a guy that could actually stay, you know, an eighth of an inch off the ground, never be at an address, that happened, and he not be assessed a penalty, yet a guy that has the club behind the ground is considered at address, and he is assessed a penalty. So it's one of those things to definitely be aware of and know the condition. I mean, these guys are out there playing greens that are rolling, you know, 10, 12 on the stint meter, and they're playing in tournaments where the wind's gusting. I mean, it's just crazy to think that it doesn't happen more often.
No, most of the time it will happen on something like you're taking a full shot and your ball sitting on pine needles. or on leaves or something like that, and you address the ball, and all of a sudden the ball moves.
Yeah, and it's bad luck. I mean, that's all it is. But that's a great example on pine straw, especially in anywhere. It doesn't have to be windy. You know, you can address the ball and move a pine needle, and all of a sudden the ball rolls just a little bit. You're in a world of hurt there. So because you are considered addressed at the golf ball.
Philip, thank you for your question. Kenny, our next question is from Tim Musson, and his is on wedges and graphite shafts and wedges. And it's kind of a long question, but we'll just net it out. He says, Kenny, I was just wondering, I have graphite shafts in my irons. Should I follow through and have graphite shafts in my wedges?
I mean, it's a good question. It's a great question. I typically, for the person that has a little bit higher swing speed or gets the ball airborne, I don't see an advantage to having graphite shaft, because you're talking about a shot typically that's going to be from 100 yards and in. And really where you have it a huge advantage on graphite shafts is helping generate a little bit more club head speed and helping get the ball airborne with the lower kick point. So here's the deal. If I had a set of irons that was 3-through pitch and wedge in graphite, and then I bought a gap wedge that matched that set, where case in point is what he did. He bought a gap wedge that matched that set. I would probably get the same shaft that matches the set of irons in a gap wedge. Now, when you get up into a sand wedge and a lob wedge, I don't see an advantage at all in having a graphite shaft in those wedges for somebody that, you know, has a higher club head speed and has no problem getting the ball airborne. So for him, he can do either there because it's not a real long shot. I think steel, whether I'm right or wrong here, is still more consistent on those shorter shots. You know, this goes back to taking a divot. You know, you tend to take a little bit steeper approach or downswing on the golf ball, taking a little bit bigger divot, trying to compress the ball to create spin. So I think that steel's a little bit more consistent. But in a gap wedge, I don't think it's as big a deal as it is in a sand wedge and a lob wedge.
From a retailer's perspective, are people still buying sets with matching gap, sand, and lob wedge as much, or are they going to more custom wedges like your Vokies or your Clevelands and whatnot, the Callaway X wedges and all? Or are they going that route?
What we've seen with the addition of hybrids becoming more popular over the last 7 or 8 years is where sets used to always be sold 3-through pitching wedge are typically 90% of our sets are stocked and sold as 4-through gap wedge. So it's going to be the exact same wedge that you get with the 3-through or the 4-through pitching wedge. So if you get steel, it's going to be steel shaft. If you get graphite, it's going to be graphite. And for the majority of the medium to high handicappers out there, what we find is they typically like to get the matching sand wedge and the matching lob wedge. And for the little bit better player, the lower to mid handicap player, typically they'll get either a 3-through pitching wedge or a 4-through gap wedge, but they don't always stay with the same manufacturer in their wedges. You know, I'm that way myself. You know, I play a certain one brand on my irons and a different brand on my wedges, a different brand on my putter, and a different brand on my driver. I'm all over the board. So, you know, to each his own, but typically what you find, especially seniors, ladies, higher handicap players, is in their wedges, they typically stay with the same type wedge that they have with their set. One, aesthetically, it looks the same. You're very, very familiar with it, and you're used to playing that golf club throughout the whole set.
Would you say, Kenny, staying on the wedges, that a sand wedge would be more akin to something like your putter? It's got to have the feel and whatnot, as opposed to, say, a gap wedge or a lob wedge?
Yeah, I mean, you can switch irons and wedges, it seems like, every year, but for a lot of people, the two clubs that they'll never really sell or get rid of or take a lot longer to replace are going to be, one, absolutely your putter, and two is your sand wedge or your lob wedge. I mean, you get accustomed to a certain look and a certain feel. I know I'm that way. I've had the same wedges and putter in my bag for quite a few years. I absolutely love them. Even if I got the exact same wedge that I have now, it's still not exactly the same. It's just one of those things. You know, you're married to these things. So typically you find that people stay with those a little bit longer. But the sets, you know, you have people that replace their sets every year, no problem.
Hey, Tim, thank you for your question again. And Stacy Howell brings our last question, Kenny. And maybe this one should be sent to Bristol, Connecticut. I'm not sure, but Stacy asks, if Tiger brings the high ratings, why in the world would ESPN start their second round coverage with Tiger on the 18th? I know the Masters is like the Super Bowl of golf, but if the Chicago Bulls were in the finals with Jordan not playing because of an injury, do you still think people would watch?
Yeah, unfortunately, the networks don't have the ability to create tee times. So, I mean, that's really what you're looking at there. On Thursday, they're obviously talking about the Masters. On Thursday, it seemed like Tiger was on all day because his tee time was late in the day, and you got a lot of Tiger coverage, which, hey, he drives ratings. I mean, there's no doubt about that. And then on Friday, you basically got to see Tiger play the last two holes or last hole, and then he was done for the day. But the deal there is set by the PGA Tour or Augusta National, where, you know, we have certain tee times throughout the day, and the networks have certain slotted times for coverage. And if he falls within those times, great. If not, then it's too bad for the Tiger fans out there that want to watch him play. The good news is that typically a big, especially a major, he's going to make the cut usually. I mean, the odds are in his favor that he's going to make it. So you're going to get to see a lot of coverage over the weekend. So, but that is definitely something that if the networks had the ability to control that, Tiger would tee off every Thursday and Friday at 3 o'clock and they would get a whole coverage of them. But, you know, there's other people that love other golfers out there. And I, you know, I got to be honest with you, there's big fans for each and every player. And those guys like to watch golf no matter who's on.
People say that Augusta National is unwilling to change, but over the years it used to be Travelers and Cadillac were the only sponsors. Now you see some different sponsors in AT&T, and now you see ESPN come to the game. And all in all, I thought ESPN did an outstanding job.
Yeah, they did. And I think where the Masters is set apart is the fact that they literally have 4 minutes of every hour of uninterrupted coverage. You know, they don't do it for the financial gain. It's an invitational tournament. They pride themselves on the ability to be able to have this tournament on their own. And the sponsors that were there were highly touted. And ESPN did a great job of covering the tournament. I thought everything went well. The finish couldn't have been any better. I mean, really, I felt bad for Kenny Perry. Here's a guy who didn't make a bogey for 23 holes, and he bogeyed 17 and 18 to get himself in a playoff. And it's whether that's pressure or whatever it is, it was still a huge golf tournament to watch. I enjoyed every minute of it. Congratulations to Angel Cabrera.
Well, I think what makes the Masters different is what makes it special. I was listening to Andy Gresh on his radio talk show, and he was going off on the past winners being invited back, a la Gary Player, and that he was, quote, taking a slot from somebody. I couldn't get to my cell phone fast enough, and I couldn't get through. But it, like you said, Kenny, it's an invitational, and they only have, what, 93 players or so? I mean, he's not taking a slot from anybody.
Yeah,
it's not a field of 144.
No, it's not, and it is an invitational. They can do what they want to do. And for a lot of people, having those past champions back is something that they want to see. I mean, guys, look, you saw the par 3 tournament with Gary Player, Jack Nicklaus, and Arnold Palmer playing the par 3 tournament. You're not going to get that every day. You know, whether the guys can make the cut or not, they're out there. People want to see them. These are legends in the game. A lot of people weren't around when they were playing golf. So for them, it's a huge plus. And obviously, look at the gallery when these guys are walking up 17 and 18 on Friday if they didn't make the cut, and how they get a standing ovation and what people think and are encouraged by them being out there. And besides that, Gary Player's in as good a shape as most guys out there on tour right now.
Boy, he looks great. But again, Stacy, thank you for your question. And Tim, Philip, Michael, Dave, and Paul, thank you for yours as well. And if we do not have your address, we will be getting it from you. Expect an email, and you'll get that Golf Better podcast cap hopefully within a week.
Yeah, thank you very much. Enjoyed the show. Don't forget to check us out on Facebook if you want to get some updates periodically on what we have going on here at our home office, or as well as at retail, and a special look at some of the email campaigns we have going on. And, you know, love to have you join us on there. And also, don't forget to leave some reviews on iTunes if you can. We love having those up there, and we love doing the show.
Well, Kenny, thanks so much for taking time out again, and we'll do it again in a couple weeks.
Yeah, thank you, Tom.
From everybody at Edwin Watts Golf, thank you so much for tuning in. So long, everybody.